Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales to retailers from March 2013. And it was a very interesting month in terms of the numbers. Now, looking at the breakdown of the total units for the top 300, Bob, we usually have a Marvel, a DC, and then, well, we've got other publishers. This time we had Marvel. Marvel came in with 46.35% of the total units. And what's impressive is they've had higher percentages. They've gone over 50% before. But, you know, since the new 52, DC's been much stronger. Image has been doing real well. IDW's doing pretty well these days. Marvel did within a percentage point almost of how well the other four premier publishers did in total. You add up DC, Image, IDW, and Dark Horse, and they did 47.39% of the total units sold, compared to the 46.35%, so a 1.04% difference between Marvel and everybody else, with everybody else just squeaking above. So Marvel and Boom did as well as the other four premier publishers. So good month for Marvel. Don't know if that's going to continue or not. DC had 31.91% of the total unit sales, Image 7.04%. IDW 4.81, and then Dark Horse 3.64% of the total units sold for the top 300. Dynamite 1.75, Boom 1.06, everything else not only below a percentage, but aside from Valiant, which did 0.88 of a percent, the next highest one there is Aspen, I'm sorry, with half a percent. Everybody else is well below that. Of course, by this point, you're only getting a handful of items, if any, into the top 300. So not too surprising. And when you figure a lot of their stuff is going to drop below the list, they're actually, you know, selling more than the percentage of the top 300 would indicate.
Yeah, you know, I think there's similarity. I mean, Marvel now has given Marvel a huge uptick, much like the new 52 initially gave DC a big uptick. What will be interesting over time, you know, because the new 52 played out after a certain point and people started dropping away, you know, how quickly and much more. It feels to me like Marvel is doing a better job with the relaunches of Marvel now than DC did with the new 52, because the new 52 seemed to have a certain amount of drop off. They had a lot of churn near the beginning with like switching creative teams around and, you know, these kind of things. And I'm not noticing that as much with Marvel. They just seem to be holding a little steadier on their books.
In terms of the creative teams, not
yeah, in terms
okay.
of in, fair, in terms of fair. The creative teams and just more of like the buzz that I've been hearing around at the comic shop and, you know, various places. You know, whereas there was a little more discontent with several of the DC series after the launch, which is, I think, what necessitated some of the musical chairs on creative teams.
But
people seem to be liking the Marvel Now books that they
I think the fundamental difference, though, is DC did a reboot. These were new versions of the characters, and that did not sit well with a lot of people. I recall you saying, with Green Arrow in particular, this was a very different Green Arrow than the one we'd been reading before, which is entirely true. One could argue that the one we're starting to read now is been retooled almost yet again to a lesser degree to be more in line with the Arrow TV show. I don't think it's a direct riff of that, but they're trying to pull in what's working there in the hopes of essentially keeping that title around, I guess. So I think with the new 52, they made much bigger changes, and that had, in some cases, bigger backlash, in other cases, bigger success. With Marvel Now, it's essentially just a common branding around the next story arcs and whatnot, with some tweaking of direction and whatnot, but really no more than we've seen over the last couple of years at Marvel. But you're right in that this is a lot of Marvel Now is the reason for the good month for Marvel. And the question is, will they be able to retain that or not? And Marvel had five items over 100,000 units this time around. And I'm going to say odds are strong that all of those are going to drop below 100,000 next month in April. Because again, we're talking the March numbers here, even though we're recording in April. Top item here really, really surprised me and frankly disappointed me. It was Guardians of the Galaxy number one, 211,312 units. Over 200,000 for that. Now we've read this, we've reviewed this. Do you think it should have sold anywhere near that much?
Given what it is, I think there's two factors there, and one of them's probably much more so than the other. I mean, it had a bunch of covers.
Oh yeah.
Not nearly. I mean, I don't think it had as many as that first Avengers book did, but it had quite a few.
Few things did.
Yeah. But I think more so is just speculation on, you know, there's a Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out. So I think people are buying multiple copies of it in the, I'm going to use my predictive abilities, you know, in the mistaken assumption that this issue is going to be worth a lot of money someday because of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Certainly the movie's playing into this.
And, you know, the funny part is whenever something is thought to be, you know, worth a lot because of X event in the future, it sort of doesn't become because there's 211,000 copies of it. You know, it's like, well, Walking Dead number one, it went up a lot. Well, there was only, you know, 4,000 copies or something of that out there, or 5,000, whatever it got printed. You know, and there's a lot of these other ones, Peter Panzerfaust and, you know, other things. Well, those things were genuinely rare, and then people want them. Here there's 211,312 copies kicking around. I just don't see there being a run. I mean, and there might be some local point in time, when, like with the death of Superman, right? I mean, that thing, they made a boatload of them, and it, for a certain point, it was it went up in value, but then it settled back down over time.
Yeah. No, there will be shortages at certain stores at certain times, whatever. But the inside back cover of that thing had, what, 16 different covers?
A lot of them were store versions, right?
Specific to stores, but I know there was a 1 in 50 variant, a 1 in 100 variant, a 1 in 150 variant. At least three of them, the retailer had to exceed orders for Avengers versus X-Men 11. There was a lot of promotional push behind this geared towards milking the collector market.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We saw this last month with Justice League of America number one, and if you look down at rank nine, we see Justice League of America number two having dropped nearly 72% down to 91,734, which is a drop of 235,225 estimated units. I mean, that's a drop that frankly would have killed the bottom 10 to 20 DC titles almost. Jeez. At least 10, yeah. So, I mean, next month, the odds of Guardians of the Galaxy number 2 being this high, I think, are low. It's conceivable it'll stay over 100,000, but I think its days of that are really numbered. And then the next item on the list there is Age of Ultron. Now, it had...
Well, it was a really good series. So, I mean, I hope that of these 200 and, you know, what it really is going to come down to is how many of those 211,312 copies, right? How many of those copies are actually getting opened up and read by someone versus they're just a multiple copy or a copy that someone's buying and immediately encapsulating in a plastic case to keep pristine in order to resell it later. And well, that's going to be the real key.
That's a great point. Let's toss that out to our listeners. I mean, we've asked before how many are at the, you know, six titles or below, and I got some really good feedback on that. There was one or two people who, they're overseas, the cost between the shipping and the exchange rate makes comics exorbitant, so they like to follow, like, the previews episodes to know what's coming out so they can be very selective, or they get it in trade or something. How many people are getting multiple covers of given things on a regular basis? Not certainly like everyone or anything, but like when Guardians of the Galaxy comes out, they'll get the regular and something else, or how many are feeding into this collector mentality? And the other question along those lines is, how many are kind of like all in or effectively so, like I am currently with the DC and the Marvel universes? I know you've pulled way back, Bob, and understandably so. That was one of the big risks with the new 52 reboot, is turning off longtime readers.
But I did get 3 copies of Guardians of the Galaxy number 1. So
seriously?
I got my regular one. I got a blank sketch cover, which I took to WonderCon with me, and I got a really cool Rocket Raccoon and Groot sketch on it.
Fair enough.
And then I really love Milo Manara, and so I got the Milo Manara Gamora cover, because I've been collecting those, but more as a, it's an art thing. I'm not buying it as a, you know.
As an investment.
But, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, if my guy at my shop, he doesn't really jack those things up to the moon. So he knows that I collect those. So he gives them to me for a reasonable price, you know, something that I'm willing to pay to put it on my spinner rack. You know, so I've got a couple of those Manara covers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so, hey, I added artificially, you know, an extra couple of copies to that total.
Well, and again, that's cool from a reader perspective. I've got no problem with that. I know back with, like, Infinite Crisis, I double-dipped on every issue because I liked the Jim Lee covers. I liked the George Perez covers. So from a reader perspective, people should buy what they want, when they want, why they want. But from a publisher perspective, this is guaranteeing a huge drop on the second issue because they're selling the cover, not the contents, not the title. And this is something where I think the industry really needs to figure out how to stem the loss of readers, get people actually reading and enjoying the content to where they can get new readers and have them stay. We've talked about this tons of times, and no doubt will, you know, be a topic of conversation moving forward till they figure this out. I mean, the second highest title this month was Age of Ultron number 1 with 174,952 estimated units. That had a 1 in 25, 2 1 in 50s, and a 1 in 100 variant covers, plus 2 that you could order if you exceeded orders of AVX versus number 1. With this was the fun part, with orders for the Age of Ultron number 1 regular cover. So to get like the blank variant of Age of Ultron number 1, they had to order more of Age of Ultron number 1 the regular cover than they did of AVX versus. And then they could order as many of the blanks as they want. So, I mean, the math on this just gets crazy. But then you look at Age of Ultron number 2, which had a couple of variant covers, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 25, and it dropped by 37.48%. Third issue dropped by another 8.26% to just above 100,000 with 100,347. Now, issues 4 and 5 have already come out in April. Those are going to drop, obviously, a little further below. It's rare for these things to kind of U-turn midstream in a mini-series event like this, but it could. So far, out of three of the things DC's, or not DC, three of the things Marvel's had over the 100,000 mark, I think we're pretty sure at least the Age of Ultron's going to dip below, taking three of them. Strong possibility of Guardians of the Galaxy, although it may get another issue or two over the 100,000 mark. And that leaves Wolverine number 1 with 117,669 units at rank 4 as the other title above the 100,000 mark for Marvel. And if it follows the standard second issue drop, which right now for Marvel Now titles is around 43.16% from the ones that were in this month's data. Third issue drop this month for Marvel Now titles was around 12.95%. Wolverine's almost guaranteed to go below the 100,000 mark as well. You know, and again, this is not a new phenomenon. This happens on rebooted titles. Not rebooted. I'm going to keep that term reserved for those that actually restart the narrative universe. This is common practice for relaunched titles with new number ones. Now, one of the things that's interesting, and we'll talk about the actual contents of this issue in the next weekly comic spotlight. But I want to talk about one of the items in the letters page from Fantastic Four number 6. And I frankly just skimmed the letters pages for replies from the editors and stuff. I didn't actually, in this case, even have think to read the question that prompted this. But the response itself was very telling and very clear. Quote, "There is no reason why we couldn't restore the numbering when issue 1000 rolled around, as we most recently did for issue 600. But the truth is, the desirability of large issue numbers for a comic book isn't that great anymore. And really, comics are one of the very few regular publications to number the way we do. Most magazines change their volume number every year, so we're slowly moving towards a system more akin to that," unquote. That is a clear admission of intent, or statement of intent, from one of the editors, or assistant editors, maybe, at Marvel for kind of the direction they're going. They are going towards more of maybe not exactly a yearly volume, akin to how most magazines do, but something more along those lines.
You know, there's one difference there that I'd like to just toss out there.
I wonder if it's the same one I'm thinking. Let's go with it, yeah.
Okay, so with a regular, and granted, okay, so Newsweek or Time or whatever, you know, they have, you know, they just like May 2013, you know, and then June and whatever, and they have different volumes. Well, it's not like when they have the new number one in January, people suddenly buy more copies of it. You know, it's just like people either buy the magazine or they don't buy the magazine. The number is completely meaningless on there. So these guys are explicitly admitting that there is a have your cake and eat it too, because they are saying, well, we would go to 1,000. So obviously there is some meaning to numbers that they are admitting, because they will renumber to a big number when they believe that it will increase their sales.
They're saying there's no reason we couldn't restore the numbering. They're not saying they will, but I agree with you. They're flat out stating, if we think it will sell more, we will do it, but we're not so sure it will sell more. Now, what's interesting is going to like a Time, a Newsweek, if those are even still being put on the newsstands, because
a lot of those are not. I mean, they're going digital. To online only. Yeah.
But most of those, it comes down to, it is dated material about a point in time. The volume number is literally akin to the year. It's not the year, but it's related to that. The issue number, the month, because they're talking about things happening around that time and point in time. They're not fiction. It makes no sense to do a new number one every January if you're in the middle of a story arc. Granted, they seem to think it makes sense to do a new number one every time you start a story arc sometimes. I mean, I see where they're going, but while there's no inherent necessarily desirability of large issue numbers, I think a point could be made there's no inherent desirability of low issue numbers either. You know, look at these second issue drops we're seeing.
Well, I mean, what they're basically saying is they will number the comics in whatever way will maximize sales.
Yes.
And as long as shops and people that buy comics buy more copies of number ones and say, oh, well, I will try this series because it's now a number one, as opposed to I will try this series because number 21 is a new story arc by a new creative team, then they're going to keep on doing it. It's a way of just getting the attention of people and getting people to try something that they might not have otherwise tried.
Oh, I agree entirely. Their job is to sell copies, and whatever makes that happen, they will try to do. My point is that this isn't effective. It is selling first issues. It is not selling in a sustained basis. It's giving the illusion that it's working, but it's not. You know, you look at how Secret Avengers is doing and stuff, and frankly, it's selling higher than it the last volume ended, but I'm willing to bet by the second or third issue, it'll kind of be right back in line with that. Secret Avengers number 2 is at rank 41 with 46,419. That's a drop of 45.56%. So huge, huge drop. I don't think we've got the third issue in this set of data, because I think it came out in April, but let me filter the list down just to be positive. Yep, we only have the one. It's short-sighted. They goose the numbers for the beginning of the volume, but then it's quickly back down to where it was. So to say that they're increasing sales by renumbering is, in terms of the number one sales, I think accurate. In terms of this overall sales of the volume, I think is inaccurate. I mean, Fearless Defenders is down to 47.39%, having lost, 25,444 units, putting it at 28,244. And it's funny because it's not just the numbering that I think is part of this. If you look at Green Arrow, number 19, 18, down at rank 86, that lost a little over 22% of its sales to 28,080. And that was essentially the second issue by Jeff Lemire, so it's akin to a second issue drop. I mean, the trends, I think, are very clear and reasonably consistent. You do something that seems like a change in direction, whether you renumber it or not, you're going to get a certain drop after people try it out. You put a ton of variant covers on it, like they do with most number ones at Marvel these days, and DC, in fairness. You see it drop accordingly, too, again, as we see with Justice League of America number two. They're not selling these things based on the content, and that means you wind up with titles that are essentially stillborn. They launch in an almost dead state. One of the recent launches at DC was Katana. Second issue dot 28.77%, putting it to 19,247 estimated units, down at rank 114. Figure 20,000 is potentially where the danger zone, the high level of the danger zone at DC. Second issue, it's in there. Vibe, it dropped 29.42%, which is, in both cases, in this case, it is 7,959 unit drop. With Katana, it dropped by 7,774 units, so not quite 8,000 unit drop in both cases, but closing in on that. And Vibe, number two, is at 19,092 units. So again, upper end of that danger zone, but second issues. It's getting hard for things to get a foothold because the stories, I think, play out over too much time. We don't have the return on the investment for single issues. They don't know how to effectively market stuff. They can't keep readers. And these are all kind of feeding in on themselves. It's surprising how quickly some of these things can drop pretty far, pretty hard. We're seeing a number of drops this time around on the Batman family of titles after the Death of the Family crossover. So you get the bump for that, then it goes down the minute that crossover storyline ends.
Not surprising, though, right? I mean,
oh no, par for the course. We've seen this every time. But it's one of those things, they do these stories to get that bump, thinking, well, we're helping sales, and they do for those issues, but not for the titles. And it comes down to, what is the goal of marketing? Is it to get somebody to read this, to buy this issue, or to read this title? And I think they've been focusing too much on buy this issue, again, with things like the variant covers and stuff. There's a market for that. I'm certainly not suggesting they turn their back on that. But, you gotta figure out how to, if you're gonna have your cake and eat it too, you gotta have a game plan that really not only facilitates that, but makes that happen. Let's take Age of Ultron, for instance, okay? Not so much the title itself, the tie-in issues. In their infinite wisdom this time around, they're doing a number AU issue on various titles. This month we have Fantastic 5 AU versus, or Fantastic 4, 5 AU, versus Fantastic 4, 5, and Superior Spider-Man 6 versus Superior Spider-Man 6 AU. Now, in the case of Superior Spider-Man, the regular issue, which came out first, outsold the AU issue, which came out a week later, by 800 units or so. In the case of Fantastic Four, the AU issue, which came out a week after Fantastic Four number 5, outsold the regular issue, so the AU issue outsold the regular one by a little over 3,000, so 3,200 units. So we're not getting a clear sense here of his tying into Age of Ultron really helping. It's certainly not hurting, but because they did 5 AU, 6 AU, and there is a regular issue of 5 and 6 for these titles and whatnot, for many people, I've got to think, well, this falls out of the regular numbering. I can skip those issues without breaking my set. They've given people an out to not get the tie-ins.
Well, it's just like, are people just kind of giving up on this as a general thing? They're saying, I'm not going to... Even people who are buying Age of Ultron, are they, A, noticing, and B, if they notice, going ahead and buying this AU issue? Because, I mean, they're not, I mean, they're branded, but not
brilliantly.
Not so much so that, you know, someone who doesn't buy Fantastic Four anyways, I guess it depends on how the store racks them. I mean, if they rack the AU issues with Age of Ultron in like a little display or something, as opposed to just putting them in alphabetical order, you know, next to Fantastic Four, where someone who's buying the Age of Ultron crossover is maybe not necessarily going to notice that the issue's there because they're not looking at at Fantastic Four because they don't buy it.
In that case, it's really coming down to whether the reader and or the retailer consider these AU issues to be part of the title or part of the event. And if people are seeing them as partial but not real issues of Fantastic Four or Superior Spider-Man, and therefore skippable if they choose to do so. And this is part of why I want to know how many people are kind of, again, at that all-in stage with Marvel and DC, or how many feel they've been pushed out of that because of these marketing shenanigans and stuff. You know, I'm very much all-in in the Marvel and DC universes. I'm getting these AU issues, not really thinking twice about it. I've got to imagine there are a lot of people who are really digging Age of Ultron and therefore getting those and not the regular issues of the title, or people who are enjoying the regular title but not Age of Ultron or don't want to get sucked into that and therefore skipping the AU issues. And again, this is where the cover they put on the issue, in this case in the form of the issue number and title specifically, are potentially influencing sales in a negative way. In a lot of other cases, particularly going back to, say, Civil War at Marvel, Blackest Night at DC, we saw sales on some titles double, triple, and in a few cases with the promotional power rings, go up 5 times what they were before. And then after that, drop back down to exactly where they were. So this is barely a blip on the radar, but the question is how much of that is because they have milked the power out of the crossover. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting times. You know, if you filter the list, switching over to DC for a bit, to just the DC titles, we're seeing a lot of the ongoing titles down at the bottom, already having been, you know, slated for ending, cancellation, whatever. Fury of Firestorm, iVampire, DC Universe Presents, Sword of Sorcery, Team 7, Savage Hawkman, Deathstroke, Ravagers. So a lot of the stuff at the bottom gone, or going away, I should say. What's interesting is the lowest selling remaining New 52 title is Batwing, with number 18 doing 12,084. Estimated units, down about 4% or whatever, and, you know, 4%, we'll go with that being a little heavy, but essentially standard attrition. 12,000-ish units, and they're deciding to do a retooling of the title versus just retiring it. I think that is a very interesting move. Not one that I would have probably made myself. I don't think the retooling is a bad idea. I think the direction they're going is potentially very interesting and ties that character much more into the Batman family. But is a title selling 12,000 units salvageable at this point in time?
Batwing is a title that just mystifies me in general. I don't know why they created it in the first place. There's got to be some internal reason why that title continues to exist.
I can't imagine what it is. I mean, to me, that's the kind of title that is selling to people like me that are all in. That unless it is something that is absolutely ridiculous, such as a Sugar and Spike, you know, Private Eye type story, if they were to try to launch that or something silly, that I might say, you're nuts, I'm not going to get that. Another Batman type character, yeah, what the heck. You know, how many of our listeners are willing to give something like that a shot? How many of them have just checked out and said, no, you've actually got to sell me on these things? And why is DC, regardless of what the answer to that question is, essentially banking on there are enough of us that'll buy almost anything they'd come out with to a degree? You know what I mean? It just seems like if there's a plan for this character after 18 issues, why haven't we really kind of seen that? Why not cut bait on this? Why keep fishing? And if you're going to keep fishing, promote the damn thing in a way that'll boost sales. Moving up the stack of low sales at DC, we've got Demon Knights, which as of the May 2013 previews does not seem to be canceled. So we'll get, you know, 22, presumably 23 at least. Dial H is continuing. Let's see. Demon Knight says 12,975 units. Dial H, 13,084. Stormwatch, 13,255 units. All of those are below Ravagers with its 13,466 units for issue number 10. And that one's slated to end with, I think, issue 12. And then we've got the recently started Threshold, number 3, with 15,109 units, having dropped 17.84%. Larfleeze is spinning out of that with issue 6, or after issue 6, when that story arc ends. If this title gets a second, you know, round or whatever extension after that, I will be surprised. Because my estimate is by that point it'll be at or below the 10,000 mark, probably. What's interesting with the Legion of Superheroes is the sales there are reasonably stable, the 17,000-ish mark. It's a more or less self-contained store, title and stuff. Issue 18 here had 16,148, so it's, you know, lost about 0.58%, so about 100 units, 94 actually by my estimate. So it's drifting down. But if they were to play up the it's a standalone title, they could possibly turn that one around. But I mean, these are all titles that I would expect to be in the next round of cuts, depending when story arcs end and stuff like that. And that may be all they're waiting for, with the exception of Batwing, that again, through some miracle, being the lowest selling one not canceled, is getting a retooling. So it boggles the mind.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, even though we can't imagine what it is, I just have to think there is some reason, whether it's a political reason or, you know, it's somebody.
They changed writers, you know, so it's not the writer.
You know, but there's just no rational reason why that title should keep on going.
I mean, I can see with All-Star Western, it's a Western book, it's different genre, let's keep that around. Phantom Stranger, that's going to tie into the Trinity of Sin, I can see keeping that around. Vibe and Katana, having just launched, I can see giving them a little bit of time to finish a story arc. But it'll be interesting to see if we ever get any indication of why they're trying to keep Batwing around. I mean, why not end that and start up some other Batman spinoff title? I mean, I've got to imagine there's other characters in the Batman family that don't already have their own title that could support one better than this, or at least no worse than this.
Yeah.
And I think they're ending Batman Incorporated, aren't they? Or am I wrong about that?
They might when Morrison's done with it, which actually would be a good move in my mind, because that is so much a Morrison thing that when he's done with what he has to say about it, you know, just letting that one end is the right thing to do.
Yeah, that one ends with 13. And again, if it's one that, again, is very keyed to a particular creator's vision and so forth, that makes sense. But again, Batwing, that doesn't hold true. Unless maybe they're thinking they can somehow absorb the interest in sales from Batman Incorporated, have Batwing start leading that team or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely boggles the mind. And then the Human Bomb miniseries, it's fourth and final issue down at rank 237, 6,379 units. Miniseries are not working for DC. They've already announced the end of DC Universe Presents with issue 19. Issue 18 was selling 11,679 units down at rank 176. So the miniseries, the series of miniseries disguised as an ongoing series wasn't working either, making it very challenging, I think, for DC to launch new properties.
Now, speaking of DC Universe Presents, they had a few issues there with Blue Beetle or Blue Devil and the
Black Lightning,
right? How were those? I mean, I read the latest issue of Justice League of America, mm-hmm. Justice League, that, you know, they're doing the recruitment drive kind of thing. And, you know, Blue Devil and Black Beetle, you know, they were in there and they were talking about, oh, yeah.
Black Lightning.
Really well, Black
Black Beetle was in Young Justice, the TV show. I don't know
Black
if you've seen
Lightning
them in the...
and Blue Beetle. Let's call them Black and Blue. They, you know, they're, you know, alluding, oh, we work really well together and all that. Were those good issues? Because I wasn't getting DC Comics Presents.
They were good issues. They were not brilliant issues. It was a good 5-issue arc. It kind of had more to do with the classic Black Lightning kind of origin and stuff. And I don't want to say shoehorning, but fitting Blue Devil into more that kind of a setup than kind of how Blue Devil had really started over in Hollywood with the movies and stuff like that. They pulled some of that in too, but it was very much going up against the 100. I think, I'm trying to remember, it was Tobias Whale in there, but it was much truer to Black Lightning than Blue Devil. The two were very much set up as a team. Almost more of a little bit of a misfit team, but they had similar goals, so they worked together, and it worked out well. Am I surprised they haven't tried to spin that off to an ongoing? Not at all. But it was a good use of a couple issues of there, just to see if that would click with the audience. Obviously, you know, with the sales of DC Universe Presents being what it is, not so much. But had they done that as a miniseries, it probably would have done worse. I mean, historically, their miniseries have. I mean, at this point, backdoor pilots is what I would suggest. If you've got a character you want to spin out to another thing, say it's those two, put them in some better-selling title, Detective, something like that. Have them team up with, you know, Batman or somebody else at the upper sales level for a couple issues, or do what they did with Zatanna back in the day. Have her show up in an issue here, an issue there, an issue, you know, some other title, just to get some exposure, some interest going, at which point then try to spin them out. But even that is not guaranteed for success, and if done wrong, like how many TV backdoor pilots tend to be done, where you Shanghai an episode of an ongoing for somebody else to star, that would have real negative repercussions, I think. And if they close that door for how to launch a new character, what do they got left? But it comes down to, I don't think comic book marketing is remotely easy compared to how it used to be. And I think they need to rebuild that lost art for the modern age and figure out how to successfully promote titles. I mean, there's only, over at DC, less than a dozen titles selling over 50,000 units. And that's a shame. You know, I don't think it's that different over at Marvel. Let me check real quick. Change the filter. And no, it is actually very different. Marvel, this time around, has 20 things selling over 50,000. We already talked about the over 100,000. Superior Spider-Man continues to be dropping sometimes. We're still in the early issues of Uncanny X-Men and Avengers. They seem to be doing pretty well with the all-new X-Men, though. By issue 9, it's still at 81,695 estimated units. But they've got a couple just skating right above the 50,000 mark by a few hundred units, such as Savage Wolverine number 3 and Thor God of Thunder number 6. So, you know, we'll see how that stuff goes, too. Mm-hmm. It just seems like the honeymoon period's a lot rougher than it used to be, with in some cases 45 or higher percentage drops on a second issue, and titles just not lasting as long as they used to. I get there's a lot more competition, the prices are higher, and there are a lot of other factors going in, but if you can't keep people on books, you can't keep selling them. It's that simple.
Now, I found a couple of things interesting here in the indie world. You know, so Walking Dead, you know, has always been a phenomenon of sales, even before the TV show. I mean, but Saga, you know, it's hanging out there. It's over 50,000.
Just barely. 50,023, but yeah.
But it seems to have grown from its debut. I mean, not when you count in all the second printings and stuff, but it seems to be doing fairly decent. And then East of West's debut coming in at just shy of 50,000 at 49,518.
Yeah.
Is another, you know, really strong for a creator-owned Image book, a very strong debut, which would seem to indicate that we now see for certain high-profile Marvel creators that, I mean, I've got to imagine that that's people who are following their work at the big publishers are giving the indie book by them a try, which isn't always the case, or at least in the past has not been the case.
What's interesting with Saga is it is on the uptick right now, which is very rare. It's gone up the last two issues, 11 and 10 are doing better and stuff. So since it kind of came back from the hiatus it had there for a bit, it's doing pretty well. East of West, we've just got the first issue here. The question is, how big of a second issue drop is that going to have? But it is nice to see things competing at this upper level within Image, and it's not just Walking Dead and then everything else selling, you know, half that or something. So what's also interesting is the My Little Pony stuff is selling pretty well for IDW. Their top three things this time are two issues of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic and the My Little Pony Micro Series, where they do just kind of done-in-one stories for different characters of that universe.
I will say that I'm very happy that My Little Pony sales are not just mystifyingly guys in their 20s buying My Little Pony, which is still somewhat odd to me. I was in a comic shop a few weeks ago, and a little girl was dragging her dad in to buy My Little Pony. And they were in the comic shop, and they were buying, you know, whatever, Rainbow Sparkle, you know, My Little Pony. And she was in there, and she was looking at some other comics, and they fortunately had it racked with other kids' comics. And, you know, this is a little girl getting exposed to comic books and getting used to reading comic books. And I think that's a great thing. I love it that you're getting these little kids to drag their parents into the shop so they can get their My Little Pony comic book, which, I mean, I'm not clued into where they're doing this marketing, but they have to. I mean, this little girl had to have heard of this from somewhere, right? And this is the kind of thing where you always say, well, you know, like such and so TV show has, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of viewers. You know, how come, you know, some number of those people are not coming in to buy the comic? And it's just, well, people have to know that it exists.
Well, and they can't advertise for it during the show.
Right. So they obviously are doing something right, and somewhere the word's getting out. And I was very happy to see that.
We saw the same sort of thing with Buffy when the season 8 stuff started, and it was doing up in the 90,000 range. We've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 9, number 19 here at rank 101, 22,424, which is still not bad sales, not as well as it was doing. But again, that was one of those cases where they got the word out to the right audience, and that helped. Granted, there's a big overlap, I think, between Buffy fans and comic fans. I don't know if that's really the case, again, with the My Little Pony. I don't know what their fan base is really comprised of. Yeah. But like you said, if they can get the word out to the right people, they can really bump up sales. And the place I think would benefit the most from that, IDW.
Yep. I'm surprised that Doctor Who doesn't sell better. You know, there's a really strong fan base of Doctor Who lately in this country. And I'm just, the sales on the Doctor Who comics don't seem to indicate that the people who are hardcore Doctor Who fans are actually buying those comics.
I agree entirely, and this is the year to really make that push, because it's the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. That's why they're doing that 12-issue series for Doctor Who, Prisoners of Time, which is selling 12,717 estimated units by the third issue there, which is down by like 13 units, so within the noise, from the second issue.
I mean, there was a huge presence of Doctor Who fans at WonderCon, and it was just like they were showing the episode that goes up on BBC America on Saturday. They were showing it on Friday. There was a zillion Doctor Who fans there, and a lot of them all dressed up and stuff. And you got to figure, you know, someone who's hardcore enough to dress up as Doctor Who and Doctor Who characters and go to a con, these have got to be people who are hardcore enough that they would be buying the comic. And then there's a lot of other, you know, what's the ratio, right? For every person who will dress up and go to a con, how many people are there who just like the thing?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is the first issue of the Prisoners of Time miniseries for Doctor Who, 12,752. Second issue, 12,730. So it lost 22 units. Third issue here is 12,717, so another, we'll say, 13 units. So it's lost maybe 35 units since it started. I mean, it virtually nothing. In other words, this is like just starting out at a level thing. So they successfully hit the target audience, or a core audience for that, not necessarily the full target audience, because to your point, there's got to be a lot more people that would dig this than are currently getting it. But it seems like the people who are getting it are really digging it because they're not really dropping it. It's funny because, again, like you said, IDW and My Little Pony, they're getting the word out to the right places, yet they haven't seemed to successfully done that as much with, be it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Star Trek, Doctor Who, G.I. Joe, and some of these other properties. If they could almost institutionalize a successful method of tapping into those audiences, they could be a real major player and stuff, more so than they are now. I mean, they're fourth place right now, but it would not be hard for them to displace Image if they could just tap into one, two, or all of those different audiences better. So it comes down to not trying to push sales of an issue with variant covers and stuff, but push the sales of the title by preaching to the choir, those who would like it. You know, this is not a new problem, yet it amazes me that it continues to be an issue. And again, not trying to trivialize that, oh, just go to the Doctor Who people and say, buy this, and suddenly sales will skyrocket. A little more than that. But there are Doctor Who magazines. There are Star Trek magazines. Well, are they advertising in those?
My son is a member of, like, the Doctor Who fan club at UC Irvine. And I ask him, I was like, you know, are the guys there, do they know about, and are they going to the comic shop and reading it? And he's like, I don't think they are, because they don't bring
Does
it up.
Does he then tell
it.
Them?
Yeah, that's what I keep telling him. And I guess he's still like, I don't want to tell him. Come on, tell him about it.
Yeah. Let's see, at rank 140, we've got the Mark Waid Green Hornet, number one, 15,114. So that comment you were making about people following creators to indie companies or whatever, granted, Dynamite's not that low profile. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. This would be one of those, I would say, more of a no.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the creator. And while Mark Waid is I think he's a great creator, he does not have the following that, you know, someone who's writing, you know, the top-selling Marvel book. I mean, even look at Daredevil. I mean, look at the Daredevil sales compared to the Avengers sales. You know,
it's a
tremendously well-written book, and it's a great book, but he's just not, he doesn't have the cachet that Hickman has right now.
Fair enough.
Although, you know, with Brian K. Vaughan, that one was interesting, because, I mean, his books have always been more, unless I'm missing, if he did like some big run on an X-Men book or something.
I'm recalling off the top of my head.
Because a lot of what he was known for is stuff like Starman and, you know, Ex Machina and other kinds of stuff that were more niche books in the first place. So the fact that he had such a strong following, come over was really tremendous. Hickman, to some extent, I mean, just having come off of Fantastic Four and now writing all the main, you know, writing several main Avengers books and stuff, I think he's front and center at Marvel.
That's fair. I can see that. Pulling up a chart real quick of Fantastic Four, because I'm curious how the sales of this volume are compared to the last. This one, let's see, number 5 right there, again, 42,590. We talked about the AU issue outselling that. That is pretty much exactly in line with how the title was doing around this time last year. So 5 issues in, and they're already back to where that title had been doing prior to the big relaunch. Which again goes to my point of, yes, you get an influx for a little bit, but then you quickly drift down to, in a lot of cases, what's the core readership for these titles? You know, making me wonder if some titles just don't have a big enough core audience, almost regardless of what you do or who you put on it. Yeah, I'm curious if people are more following creators, following characters, or if it's they've got to have the right mix of the right character, right creator on the right character at the right time or something. Because I just see constant, dropping of sales for the most part. There are a couple of places where, yeah, things bump up, but that's fewer and further between.
Right.
I mean, the net gain and loss from issue over to issue differences is almost, I mean, it's real close to 800,000 units. Whereas this month is actually up almost 200,000 units over the top 300 sales for the previous month. So you look at it one way, sales are up. You look at it another way, sales are down. I think both metrics have value and are measuring very different things. From a retailer perspective, there's a lot to be said for, you know, the aggregate sales, the top 300, not necessarily directly equating, but being analogous to kind of what's going through their cash register, and that's very important. Yet the net loss here of the 800,000 is analogous to the loss of sales. It is the loss of sales on continued titles, which again impact, you know, what's going through the cash registers at the comic shops. Now, there are a couple of cases where I expect huge drops. Rank 260 was one of them, with the second issue of Legend of the Shadow Clan. That dropped by 84.1% from the first issue. But first issue was a dollar price, promotional pricing there. Second issue was a $3.99 price point. So I expect a lot more people to sample that first issue than to pre-order that second. Maybe we'll see it rebound going forward. Maybe we won't. That was by Aspen over at Image. We also had a large drop on Some of Merlin at rank 257. That dropped by 57.36%. Again, dollar first issue. In this case, a $2.99 second issue, which is part of why I think it's less of a drop. So in those cases, I don't really, you know, worry about that kind of stuff. People are going to sample first issues much more than they're going to get the second issues. We usually see large drops on second issues. Add in a noticeable price point difference, and you're going to see a larger drop. That's a given. So we'll see how those pan out going down the line. Taking Kevin Smith's name off the Bionic Man caused that to drop by roughly 400 units. But
how many issues of that did he actually write? I mean, or was it just all based off
of some
script
any of them.
He wrote or something?
It was based off the script he wrote for the movie. I don't believe he wrote a single one of these. But they've since moved well past what the movie would have covered. And it's been losing, you know, a couple hundred to 1,000 units on a regular basis. So the taking his name off the solicit hasn't really impacted it at all. Mm-hmm. Again, had he been writing it, that might have been different. But that title started at 17,187. Drop below 10,000 pretty quick, and now it's just shy of dropping below 5,000. So, again, you know, I expect some drops on some of these things. I'm surprised how low certain titles are able to get. Again, that Human Bomb below 6,400 units for a title set in the DC Universe. That's surprising. We'll see how many more of the new 52 kind of get rotated out, and more importantly, what they replace them with. Are they going to replace these things with more marketable titles?
I look at things down at the bottom, and I just look at someone that says, like, Highways, for instance.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good series. It's like 41-37. People aren't giving that one a look, you know?
But it didn't lose much ground from the second issue. It lost a lot between the first and the second. Frankly, I was pleased to see it still on the list. It's interesting because I'm getting about a little over 60% of what's on this list. Now that's including some reorder activity. So, you know, some of that gets double counted from month to month or whatever, but not quite 2/3 of the list. I've actually read and can, you know, therefore talk about or whatever. And in some cases, I'm not too surprised when things drop off in sales. Some of the Bionic Man stuff, I see why it's selling where it is. Whether I agree with some of that or not, I can understand it. But yeah, there's some things like the Highways. It's John Byrne. If you haven't figured out by now, particularly over the last couple of miniseries he's been doing recently at IDW, even if you never read him back in the day, you've got enough to go on these days.
And I think a lot of that, though, just speaks to how many fans does he have anymore.
Yeah, because, again, he's not been a major player at Marvel and DC in a long time.
Right.
And he did the all-new Atom a number of years back, but that went, you know, so-so. That didn't light the world on fire. But, you know, not many things do these days.
Of late, though, I would say I much prefer the stuff that he does that's not Marvel and DC stuff. you know, when he did his Doom Patrol take, for instance. I was like, eh, it was okay. It wasn't something that I would say, wow, that was great. But I really enjoyed the arc he did on Jurassic Park, for instance.
I liked his Star Trek stuff. I'd like to see him doing...
Right, his Star Trek stuff that he did was really good. You know, and Highways has been really good. I just like that stuff that he's been doing lately a lot more than at the big publishers. And maybe, you know, if somebody reads the stuff at the big publisher, they're like, ah, this isn't very good, so I'm not going to read the other stuff by him. It's like, well, my opinion, the other stuff he's been doing is actually better. So even if you have tried some of the stuff he's done for, you know, DC or something and not cared for it, give some of the other stuff a try, because I think it's actually better.
Well, that was kind of why I was surprised by the Mark Waid Green Hornet number one selling around the 15,000 units, is if you've read his stuff on Daredevil or some of the other stuff he's done at Marvel and DC, or even over at Thrillbent with Insufferable and stuff, or Boom with Incorruptible and Irredeemable, this is just another superhero kind of a title for him. So, if you know, is this the size of his following or what? I would like to think it's bigger than that, because I think he's done a lot of great stuff, but, you know, we'll see. Oh, another one just shortly above that had a huge drop, unsurprisingly, again. Invincible 101 at rank 137 dropped by 65.46% from the really strong sales of the 100 issue, but given the multiple covers and the big hoopla and stuff like that, not a surprise. This also puts it pretty much right back where it was with issue 99. It's about 26 units below that. So, again, you can... Selling single issues of a title, very doable. Sometimes you need the magic number, sometimes you need the variant covers, sometimes you need a new creative team. You can work those issues, or wait for those issues. But just keeping readers and growing sales, that's the big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Until that gets figured out, we're going to see a continued rotation of titles and stuff at the various publishers. What's interesting is even after the latest set of cuts and stuff at DC, they still have almost two-thirds of the original New 52 titles they started with still going. They've got about 63%, I think, thereabouts. So not quite two-thirds, but close. And I know it's felt like, and there has been a lot of turnover over the last 2 years, but... You know, figuring almost 2 years, just shy of 2 years in, really, to still have that many of the original titles still going in this kind of competitive market, I think is pretty impressive. I'll be curious to see if that the same holds true with the Marvel Now stuff, or if, as stated in the Fantastic Four letters page, they're just gonna, you know, switch creative teams, roll over to a new volume. And again, I see pros and cons of that. I just don't know that that is, in and of itself, a viable strategy for maintaining sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it complicates the ordering process, the back issue process, the whole thing, which I think slowly erodes sales just in general. Because it gets to be too much trouble, it gives people jumping off points. We've talked about that. If the current Superior Spider-Man stuff was still under the name Amazing Spider-Man, you might still be getting it. You might not.
I would absolutely still be getting it if it was still Amazing Spider-Man. But that said, I mean, things that don't resonate with me, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that there's a lot of people that I hear saying that they had not been reading Spider-Man and they only jumped on it because of the Superior relaunch and they're really loving it. You know, so it's, you know, there are those people like the Captain America relaunch. I mean, going into Dimension Z, I mean, that was completely not my cup of tea. But there's a lot of people who are loving that hadn't read Captain America in years, you know, so.
And I see that, but there comes a question of, more so with Captain America than I think Superior Spider-Man, are they loving that story or are they really loving Captain America? Because I'm not convinced what they're getting is Captain America. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. I mean, that's kind of why I'm not getting it, because it just doesn't feel like Captain America to me, at least not a Captain America that I want to read about. But, you know, it's basically I can see someone, and I've only, you know, tell me how accurate this is, because I'm looking at this from the outside looking in. But, you know, Captain America going to a weird dimension and he's carrying a baby around and it's growing up. It's like, is that just like Cable and Hope? I was going to make that. Superficially, it seems like that, but given that I haven't read either one, it's hard for me to make a comparison other than just kind of like seeing covers and snippets of stuff.
There are a few differences, but at a high elevator pitch level, that's incredibly accurate. And at what point have you changed the premise, the setting, and the take on the character so much that it's no longer what it essentially was? The story they're doing could have just as easily been done with The Punisher, with Cable, with...
Well, they'll get around to having a story where Punisher does that in time, I'm sure.
Yeah. It seems like they need to take a longer-term approach on some of this stuff and slowly tighten up the storytelling, beef up sales, and give a better return on the investment. Just across the board. I'm not picking on any particular title at the moment on that. You know, in the last Weekly Comic Spotlight, we talked about that issue of Ferris that was a done-in-one, a great jumping-on point, a great sampling issue. It's a shame that a sampling issue of Fables had to take place in another title, and that they're few and far between to have those good jumping-on points. Now, I think Fables usually is more accessible than most other titles, but, you know, to me that was the fallacy of the whole Point One movement at Marvel. And I think the irony of the AU issues at Marvel is those are highly skippable issues if people want to do so without getting a gap in their numbering sequence of issues. They're giving people outs. They're not giving people enough inroads. So it's kind of a what do they expect? We'll see how things go moving forward. As always, I expect a couple of these things at the top to drop dramatically. We'll see, you know, if some of these titles stick around, if some of them don't. I expect, again, there's at least five titles that I think have to be under consideration for being cut at DC. There are a couple at Marvel, too, and stuff. But, you know, we'll see what happens. You got anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that covers it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlon, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.